In the dead of night, when the moon is high and ill winds blow, and the banshees cry and the moonlight casts an unearthly glow, arise, my love, with tales of woe.
Good evening. It is 12 midnight, the Paranormal Hour. Welcome to Ghost. I'm your host, Chief Lawson. Ghost to Ghost is a podcast to discuss all paranormal and parapsychology subjects. You can find Ghost to Ghost on all major formats, so tell your friends, tell your family. Come listen to Ghost.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It is now time for Ghost to Ghost. Tonight's topic, time slips. Very controversial subject. With me tonight is Jennifer Verne, our research manager and podcast producer.
Good evening.
And Heather Lawson, our case manager and podcast director.
Hello.
Well, Jennifer, this is one that Jennifer picked, and it's a neat subject, and it's come up a lot here lately. I've seen it in the news. I've seen little innuendos in movies, mm-hmm. or especially YouTube videos.
Well, especially movies. It's all over the place.
Oh, yeah.
In movies.
Yeah.
Before we get started, back from vacation, and we went out to Outer Banks like we usually do, and I found this really cool little crystal shop in Duck, North Carolina. And I wanted to give them a shout out because they were the sweetest ladies there. We had a really good time. And once they found out I was a paranormal investigator, we were talking about ghosts. And because it's the shipwrecks of the Atlantic out there, all the shipwrecks out there, right? And there's a lot of haunted places out there. And she actually had a shop over on Roanoke Island.
Oh.
And it was
home
haunted.
Of the Lost Colony.
Exactly, yeah. And I love going over to Roanoke. It's just the greatest place out there.
I'll have to take Heather there. We'll have to go one time and get all those locations from you. That would be neat to do.
Yeah, they've got a ghost hunt out on Roanoke. And Charles and I went the very first year we went out there, and we were the only two people on the on that walk. So it was just me and Charles and the
guide.
Yeah. We had such a good time.
Oh, yeah.
So we were talking, and they were selling these little tiny stone ghosts, crystal ghosts. And so I've got two, and I'll bring them, and they're going to be our little podcast icons.
Ghost to Ghost.
Yeah.
All right.
If anybody's on the Outer Banks in that area, out in Duck, North Carolina, in the Scarborough Fair shops, it's called the Crystal Gypsy.
Wow.
And they are fabulous in there. You got to stop in. Anything crystal you want, whether it's raw crystal, geodes, shaped crystal, talismans, amulets, they've got it all. It's wonderful.
And what's the name of the shop again?
The Crystal Gypsy.
Crystal Gypsy. And it's
in the Scarborough Fair.
Scarborough Fair
edition, North Carolina.
Shopping area. Okay.
Yep. Gorgeous place. So shout out to you girls. You did a great job. Thank you so much for being so
Did you tell
amazing.
Them to listen for this?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Oh, good.
Told them all about it.
If you're on there and you're from the Crystal Gypsy, go on Facebook. Leave us a comment. We'll certainly plug you next time, too.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So, okay, the time slips. I had an entirely different way I was going to go about this. But, of course, in my research, I ended up down a different rabbit hole. So let's start and see where we end up. This might unravel on us and tangents galore, but let's get going. Where to start with the topic? It's not really easy to chalking this up to just seeing ghosts or watching a residual haunting take place.
Sure.
Okay. There is actually very complex theories and formulas around the quantum mechanics of this. And I'm not a mathematician, not an astrophysicist, nothing like that. So bear with me. I might get some of this wrong. I might get it some backwards. But we're going to take a quick look at the nature of time. Okay. So Einstein's theory of relativity, the speed of light, quantum dimensions, wormholes, the multiverse. Yep.
Spider-Man would be happy.
Exactly, right?
Yes.
So one of the biggest unknowns in science is the nature of time.
Mm-hmm.
What is it? How does it work? I found an article by Elisa Broderick on psychologytoday.com, and it was called Time Slips, the Multiverse in You.
Yeah.
And in it, I found out not all clocks record time at the same rate.
No.
Now that blew my mind.
Yeah, now that I didn't know from the Navy. Yeah, they don't do that.
Clocks on airplanes run differently. Satellites are even more different.
Yes.
And so all of our clocks on the Earth.
Yes.
They keep time the same way. But the further away from Earth you get, they record differently. Like the two astronauts, the twin astronauts, the Scotts, the Kellys.
Kellys, yeah.
The one spent a whole year in space.
Yes.
And he aged differently than his twin brother down here.
Yes.
He was younger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, okay, so right there, we know we've got something interesting going on, right?
Yeah. Somewhere Einstein is really smiling going, I told you so.
I told you so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because in 1905, he links space and time together in a single continuum.
Yep.
And in this continuum, events can occur at different times for one observer than it does for another observer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a weird concept to get your head around. That's just bizarre.
Well, you know, most people have enough trouble trying to figure, you know, time zones when you're traveling across the United States. But then when you start adding in space, that's a whole... Are you insinuating something there? Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. You know, and the worst problem I have is forgetting or, you know, I had to make a check sheet when we change time because we in Indiana are on daylight savings. So when we do, because I always will miss a clock somewhere.
Well, I remember back in the days when we didn't change and we had to remember.
And it was a lot better then, I'll tell you that, in my opinion.
Well, I had family out in the mountain in the Pacific coast, and I had to remember, are we 2 hours or 3 hours different now? I don't remember. But yeah, I preferred it when we didn't change times.
It's always 3 hours.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't
change. What was it I was calling the other day? And
it did back when we didn't change clocks.
No, it's still always 3 hours behind.
So when I was growing up, when we were on...
Pacific time will always be 3 hours behind.
Yeah, that's not daylight. What she's saying is you have Pacific, Atlantic, and Central. Those don't change.
No.
There's time differences between them. But now what she's talking about, though, you're both on wrong channels.
Yeah.
She is talking about the actual daylight savings and the changing of time.
Yeah, when we didn't change times.
Yeah, we didn't. We
and everybody else did.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we didn't in Central Indiana. We didn't change times.
About Central Indiana. She's not talking about the rest of the world. We're talking about just...
So like on certain times
Chicago
of the year,
changed.
We were on one time. And then when they all went to daylight savings, Indiana didn't. We stayed. So then I was always on a different time from Denver and San Diego.
Exactly. And this is where the head wrapping and the mind wrapping becomes
sorted. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Well, and you know... A lot of people don't realize, I always tell people, they say, well, you know, how do you set your clocks? Well, the Navy way, we call the Naval, actually can go online and get the Naval Observatory time. That's Greenwich Mean Time.
Right.
And a lot of people don't know what Greenwich Mean it means. But we have a standard within the world in general that we go
on. To call on the phone.
Oh, yeah. I forgot all about that. Yeah. Oh, hell yeah. I remember that. Yeah, you used to call the time number. It would tell you what the time was. Our kids would do it.
It used to be the movie line.
Yeah, the movie line.
Yeah.
You used to call the movie line. That's what time it was.
Yeah, I mean, well, there was a number here in India. I remember you called it, and it would give you the accurate, correct time.
Yep.
And I remember I did it like 15 times. My dad looks over and goes, you don't even want to watch. Put the phone down. And, you know, I must have been 8, 9, something like that. But, yeah, that's... You know, that's what we did. I remember they had it. They had dial prayer, and they had
you used to have it too.
What?
You would tell you the temperature.
Well, yeah, you had. Well, you had weather. You could call here and get the full weather from the National Weather Service. Those were three calls I was allowed to make. But Dad always told me if I made too many of them, I would need dial prayer. Get off the phone, because you know now it wasn't metered, but back then you just weren't as a kid. You didn't get on the phone and stay a lot. It was
that's
just not allowed.
I ended up calling Hong Kong once.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah. If I had, they'd have killed me. I mean, you know, I never did experiment a lot with a phone, but I always go to school, and there's always some guy who goes, guess what I found out? I found out if you call this number, you get the time. It's like, no shit. Yeah, so the next day, as soon as we got home from school, I got to get the time, you know? And actually, later on, they got road conditions. I remember when you could call the state police, and you could either call the north number or south number, and it would give you the road conditions for north and south.
Gracious. Yeah. Well, I don't think Einstein was talking about daylight savings time or anything like that when he was talking about that.
You could thank Benjamin Franklin for that one.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Everybody remembers that part in National Treasure where they, you know, he starts talking about, you know, the actual daylight savings, who invented it, and so forth. And, and in a lot of ways, you know, and why it was invented, and I'll let you tell this because you always like to tell this.
It's for agricultural reasons.
Right, yeah.
So you can have longer time out in the field.
Right.
Yeah.
And then in the winter when you don't need it.
It curves back.
It's you fall back so you save your candles.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
So you burn less candles.
Yeah.
So that's why.
That makes sense.
Well, and you know,
I mean, who needs a clock anyway? Just wake up when the sun gets up and go to bed when the sun goes to bed.
When you retire.
That's basically what it was.
Yeah, exactly.
One of the first things I noticed when I was down in the South Indies was they go on something called island time. Because I asked the guy, I said, you know, we were down there, and I asked him, I said, well, I thought this place opened at 8 a.m. He says, oh, man. He says, they're on island time. I go, well, what the hell is that? He goes, that means they're not opening at 8 today. And he's walked off. I thought, well, that's unhelpful. And it turned out island time means whatever time they get there.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very relaxed. I thought, you know, when I retire, I want to be on island time. Well, that didn't work. Anyway, but yeah, it's interesting how they look at things down there.
Yeah. So Einstein's original theory in 1905 was talking about the single continuum.
Yes.
And then in 1915, he added gravity to that mix. He figured out that gravity is what is creating this disturbance in this continuum. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so then what is gravity? We should all know basically what gravity is. It's a force of attraction that two objects exert on one another. Okay.
Exactly.
So, and Einstein added this to an equation, he found that this created a distortion that can warp the fabric of space-time. Okay, so then this is where my mind starts to
This is where
go.
The ripples come in.
12 different, yeah. So, bear with me as we go, because I've got one sort of analogy in here, and then as I was explaining this to my mother on vacation, I ended up using a different analogy that I like even better. So,
we
may try to work that in here a second.
Yeah, because that helps. I mean, I read, which very few people do. I have a copy of it up here. It actually is a very layman term of the theory of relativity and the theory theory of relativity and theory of equal. I'm lost. I can't remember the other. So I've got the book. Anyway,
we're gonna have to wait for that. Yeah, that merry-go-round.
Yeah, I always say my mind works like a merry-go-round. Wait for the right horse.
It's the Mary Poppins. It has jumped the carousel. It's gone.
You know, it's theory of relativity and theory of time and space. Basically, is what we're gonna say. But it was really, it was one of those reads. When you got out of there, you suddenly had a whole new look on things, and it was like, wow. Never thought about that.
Yeah,
you know, precisely. I don't remember what movie it was, but they had this movie, and I remember these guys were real stoned, and the one guy says, yeah, think if one cell under your fingernail was an entire civilization. How many, and I'm thinking, yeah, it's one of those kind of things. Your mind is really blown after you read this, you know.
I mean, I think our mind is going to be blown after this, because there are so many different possibilities and so many new ways to then, at the end here, tie this into our paranormal experiences, which is what I'm going to get into here. But this warping of the space-time fabric, this is where the multiverse theory can help us explain this warping. And maybe it can make, you know, it possible for people to travel faster than the speed of light during these time slips, okay? The multiverse theory comes about from a Big Bang theory of cosmic inflation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is about as much as I can go into, because it kind of makes my brain hurt a little bit.
Yeah.
But ultimately, according to people who are way smarter than me, it creates the grandfather paradox.
Okay.
And I think we all know what the grandfather paradox is. I think every movie trope that has tried to do a time slip has got this grandfather paradox.
Mm-hmm.
Quantum Leap, the Marvel movies, you know, Doctor Strange movies. Anything that has to do with multiverse theories is going to have a grandfather paradox. If you go back in time to kill your grandfather because he was a bad man or whatever, that ceases your existence, right?
Because
it would depend. But, or the butterfly effect, that movie, the butterfly.
Yeah. Now, see, that's a different effect, too. Yeah, it's a ripple. But
one
still.
One little change can affect so much.
Yeah. Well, Back to the Future, any of these. You know, and that one probably is a good example, because McFly is trying to get, Marty's trying to get his mom and dad to kiss. And because of the kissing, he's looking at this photo and he's gradually
fading out. And everybody's
fading out. Yeah.
It's like, whoa, wait a second. Because, well, because he went back, he changed the circumstance. Now his mom likes him, and, whoa, we can't have that happening. So he starts to fade from the future. But Einstein and Stephen Hawking.
Yes.
Stephen Hawking, they thought it was theoretically possible that we could time travel. At some point, we're going to have the knowledge and understanding to create time travel.
The question is, will we have the intelligence to how to use it? You know?
Yeah, we're not going to go down that road. So
there's a lot of things that we can do now that we should really.
Yeah. Well, the big conversations now is on AI. You know, we're waiting for Skylab or,
you know,
what was it off Terminator?
Skynet.
We're waiting for Skynet to happen.
You know.
It
could happen.
Yeah.
But, okay, there are actually people who claim to time travel, right?
Yes.
I mean, actual time travel.
Yes.
And when we're talking about these time slips in the paranormal world.
I mean, who's to say that someone didn't view it, didn't time, theoretically.
Okay, so that's what we're going to dive into here a second. So, how do you travel faster than the speed of light? I mean, how does the warping work? And is that what creates wormholes?
Yeah.
And so, maybe science can get behind this and figure this out. Because this is where I'm going to go off the rails here a second, I think.
Now, I'm going to help you because I got some ideas on this, too, we ought to throw out. Go ahead.
So, to explain the idea of the multiverse or dimensions.
Yes.
And I was talking to my son about this, and I was describing a stack of loose leaf paper. And when you have a stack of loose leaf paper, if you imagine each of those sheets of paper as being a segment or a quantity of time.
Sure.
I don't know what.
A layer. A layer of time. Yeah.
10 minutes, 10 days, a month, 10 years, whatever. And those are rubbing around and slipping together as you're holding them, right? With all that friction, okay, so let's think about some sort of force that is warping that time fabric.
Yes.
Okay, and it can be any number of things we'll get into in a minute. But think about that friction creating a wearing of the paper or a bleed through, and those dimensions, those layers are bleeding through each other.
Sure.
Okay, or in some places maybe creating a hole.
Yes.
Through each other. And I think when I think about the Deep Space Nine wormholes or you know, space wormholes where you can travel long distances from time, because this came up when my son was talking about aliens, and they were going to put a rocket fuel station on the moon. And I'm like, that's not really going to help you because you can't travel very big distances on rocket fuel.
No.
Fast anyway.
And the reason that they were talking about that is they claim they have an anti-gravity drive engine, which, you know, that's speculatory, but it,
right. Yeah. But, you know, so then he and I started talking about this theory.
Yes.
And if you got something creating a warp in between those layers, it creates a hole. You can get from the top layer to the bottom layer faster than if you pull all of that out. Now, when I was explaining that to my mother, she's like, I don't understand that. So I said, okay, she's a crocheter. She knits crochet.
Sure.
Imagine a ball of yarn. If you took that ball of yarn, as time, we know it, we stretch it out literally.
It goes as,
right? As a line.
Yep.
And if you want to go from this point all the way down to this point, it's going to take you forever.
Yeah.
But if you have that ball of yarn all rolled up into a ball, all commingled.
Yes.
Then you can get from this end to that end faster because it's right next to each other.
Well, the way that I was always presented is you take a piece of paper, and if you're traveling along the paper, can everybody see this? Anyway, all right. So as you're traveling along the paper, and I tell you what,
Scotty did this.
Well, maybe you did. I may be stealing this from, you know, the greatest, you know, compliment to anyone is plagiarism. No, I didn't say that. Anybody in college, don't quote me on that.
The greatest engineer.
Star Trek, Scotty,
I lied.
Hi, Captain. Yeah. I've given her all she has, but anyway.
Give her all she's got, man.
Yeah, what the theory really was with Einstein is if you bend,
sure, Scotty,
if you're
bend
here
it.
And you want to go there, if you just bend the
bend
time where they touch,
right,
and that's the way it was presented. And when you think about it, where they got the name warp drive because it was
warping
the layer of time.
Okay.
And you know, I will say the late great Gene Roddenberry, my God, people don't realize how much he has influenced our generation to this day. I mean, that's a whole new wormhole.
This is a wormhole for a different podcast because I've got my own theory. My husband looks cross-eyed at me, and so I'm not going to mention it here.
Well, there was a whole
but when we get off, I'll mention
TV show
it.
Yeah, basically all about it.
Yeah,
yeah. There's one called William Shatner. How Star Trek
changed the world,
and it was really
like
a neat show.
It's amazing.
I always tell everybody I had one of the old Teltec phones that were made by Motorola, and it looked just like a communicator flipped up. It had the communicator grid on the backside, and everybody, you know, we all sat around my office one day going, it looks just like a communicator, and it was designed that way. I mean, you know, it did have a lot of effect, but anyway, we'll go with that another time. Now,
okay, so the aspect that I'm now going to go here, okay, because that is way out in space. That's physics. Sure. That's astrophysics. That's something I...
That's beyond what we're that's beyond talking about my within understanding, these. Okay.
Right? Okay. But let's bring it down a second. And I'm going to jump to a section over here that I have later, but I'm going to bring it in right now. Mm-hmm. It's okay. So, Stargate.
Yeah.
Okay? I was talking about Deep Space Nine's wormhole, but Stargate. They've got a portal, right?
Yes.
It mm-hmm. looks like... What does it look like? What does that portal look like? Have you guys ever had one of these before?
Yes.
Well, first I want to say, before everybody disowns me, I only watched like one episode of this. I never saw the movie.
Okay.
But it's a big stone.
I've never watched Stargate, yeah. but I know what the Stargate
Somebody
is.
Has, yeah.
Somebody has. And everybody loves it.
It just looks it's like just a stone arch to me, but I mean, you know.
What does it look like?
It looks like an MRI machine.
It looks like an MRI machine.
Oh, okay. Never thought of it
what
that way.
What is an MRI machine?
It's a magnetically ran okay. imaging device.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Magnets.
He is magnetic.
Magnetics.
Yeah.
Giant. Magnets. Electric okay. magnetic so, field generator.
Exactly. So this Stargate looks like an MRI, but it's got ripples like water in a pond.
Yeah.
Okay? All right. Keep going because I'm spitballing here. So
no, that's
let's
fine.
Just
that's
keep
fine.
Going.
I'll stay with you.
Like when pebbles are thrown into a pond and uh-huh. you see a ripple.
Yes.
Okay. If you throw two or three pebbles, those ripples
yeah.
are going to interact.
Now
and
we're talking
overlap
about
and merge.
The butterfly effect.
Now we're
and,
talking butterfly
well, effect. And fractal logic.
A static wormhole. Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Precisely.
Static meaning it doesn't
precisely.
Move. It holds.
Yes. Okay.
Whereas when you get into the butterfly effect or you get into fractal logic, which, you know, says that, hey, you know, no two, you can't repeat the same thing three
and
times
you,
to get
you,
the same
you
result.
You traveled from here to others, planets,
right.
places, by dialing,
dialing
in.
Dialing in.
Yeah.
With your the frequency. Symbols. Basically, yeah.
frequency
right?
is yes. what's really important
yes.
to all this. Yeah.
Exactly. Okay.
Because everything vibrates, and
right.
people don't realize this. Light vibrates. We all vibrate. If you know what frequency, and in the military discovered this a long time ago for weapons, you can use that
yes.
on certain frequencies to really yes. disrupt the brain.
Yes, and I think later we're going to be talking, in another episode, we're going to be talking about infrasound.
Yes.
We're talking about
yes.
other frequencies and other wave
yes.
patterns as well there. Okay. So, think about this now.
Mm-hmm.
Wherever you find... areas of strong magnetism,
yes,
high magnetism, next to areas of low magnetism,
mm-hmm.
you were going to find higher clusters of paranormal activity.
Sure.
Okay.
The ley lines.
I was just going to say.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't take that from you. Yeah. Just no. popped in my head. Ley lines. Yeah.
Magnetism.
Do we need to start raising hands?
Magnetism here mm-hmm. is going to be our key. Magnetism works a lot in a lot of our paranormal theories. Does
sure.
it not? Okay. Magnetism is like a force of gravity, right? Okay. So mm-hmm. listen. When you have two magnets and you've got them flipped on the same ends and
yes.
you try to put them together, they
no,
are
they
going
go.
To... Right, because they're detracting each uh-huh. other. Their forces are pushing each other away.
Yeah.
Okay. So if you have two areas of different magnetisms, we know we have paranormal activity. So is our electromagnetism working like gravity in terms of the space-time continuum? Our
well,
areas...
of the Earth...
Right. Are areas of weird magnetism creating a warping of that structure?
Mm-hmm.
Now, think of other paranormal ideas, like the ley lines.
Yeah.
Our ideas of running water, right?
I'm sorry. The one thing I just keep sitting here thinking is, I wonder how fast you can spin an MRI machine. I mean, that's been going over since you mentioned it. Now it's in my head, and I'm thinking,
yeah.
you know, if you could hyperspin that, I just wonder if you create a gate. I mean,
why
you know,
do you think the star... Gate
yeah.
used that kind of imagery because that's what the
yeah.
an MRI flips that
yeah.
electromagnet.
What now?
You'd have to come up with a cooling mechanism for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you could probably
do that. I mean,
but if you put
hard.
It in the vacuum of space, you've got
yeah,
the
then
cooling.
You don't have
no.
any temperature.
You
know,
you've got to find.
Yeah.
So and also,
so anybody has a used MRI machine, we're interested
yeah.
in borrowing it for a little while. Yeah. Anyway.
Borrowing.
And
sorry.
Our stone tape theory. Works perfectly with this
oh, yeah.
idea of magnetism,
yeah.
especially within the rocks, because the rocks are magnetized.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
quartz.
They,
yeah,
exactly.
Exactly. Magnetite alone is magnetized.
And the other thing, Heather, are standing stone circles, are fairy rings,
yes.
things like that. What if those are in areas of certain electromagnetic disturbances, right? Maybe in that area there is a warping.
Well, I know Stonehenge is on a ley line,
yeah.
and so is a lot of the other
there
ones.
There are so many...
Which is a source of magnetism.
You know, does it even have to be on a ley line? I don't know. But this gives some option to ley lines. So if the electromagnetism is a catalyst for this time warping, Does that maybe explain why some of these time slips are occurring? Are we actually entering into mini wormholes on the Earth? Okay, it's an idea. So
yeah, it is. Yeah.
I'm going to take a look here at a case, and I'm going to try to remember not to get back to that area, at a case that I would not have put into a time slip until I read that article on Psychology Today about the time warping, okay, and Einstein's theory. And most people are going to know this, but this came about through an electromagnetic disturbance.
Anomaly, okay.
Okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bruce Guerin and two other passengers departed from Andros Island in the Bahamas at 3 p.m. on December 4th, 1970. Chief knows where this is going.
I know this. I know this account.
And I'm sure that anybody who's listening to our podcast is going to know where this is going. He was in his Bonanza A36 mm-hmm. on a flight that took him through the Bermuda Triangle on their way to Bimini. Along the way, the plane was engulfed by a strange cloud that appeared to be following the plane's movements forward and upward in altitude. They eventually broke free from the cloud, only to come to a similar cloud a short distance ahead. Mm-hmm. This cloud appeared white and fluffy and harmless, so Guerin continued ahead. But once inside, it was dark, with flashes of light indicating that they had entered a dangerous electrical storm. At 3:27 p.m., Guerin turned the plane 135 degrees, heading south in an attempt to break free from the cloud. At this point, Guerin radioed into Miami to notify them of their change in course. When they attempted to read their location via the magnetic and electronic navigational systems on board, they discovered that their instruments were malfunctioning, which makes sense if they're in an electronic storm. Yes. It's not going to be working. Mm-hmm. Guerin contacted Miami Aircraft Control to get their assistance to find out where they were via radar.
Here's the big catch.
However, Miami claimed that there were absolutely no planes visible on the radar anywhere between Miami, Bimini, and Andros.
Yeah.
Which means their plane is completely invisible. Guerin tried to navigate with his own mental compass, and after a few minutes, the Miami radio controller announced that he had just spotted a plane directly over Miami Beach heading west.
Yes.
Guerin did not believe that was his plane, the controller saw, because they had only been flying for 34 minutes and there was no way he could have reached Miami in that amount of time.
Yeah, exactly.
It was then that the gray fog around them began to dissipate in a strange way that Guerin described as horizontal ribbons across the sky, and mm-hmm. they gradually expanded until the fog was gone.
Yes.
When the fog disappeared, Guerin could see that he was, in fact, over Miami Beach.
Mm-hmm.
With their visibility and navigational instruments restored, Guerin landed the plane at the Palm Beach International Airport, and the entire flight lasted a total of only 48 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Guerin was baffled by the experience, not only due to the weather and instrument anomalies, but because the apparent loss of time.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where he's gone through a time slip, a wormhole, to speak, you know. Even on direct flights in the past, the trip from Andros to Palm Beach takes a minimum of 57 minutes.
Yeah.
And there's a website that goes into greater detail, which is where I got a lot of this information from. Mm-hmm. They do a mathematical analysis of Guerin's flight. They believe that he experienced a time warp field that involves bending space and time, which enabled the craft to reach higher speeds than it would normally be able to reach.
Exactly.
And that article is... I'm going to spell
He'll
it out.
He'll be listed it's, in the yeah, it's gonna be in description our show notes. Of this.
It's peerspacewarpresearch.org, the Bruce Guerin flight.
Yeah, well, I'll list it on the description. Yeah. So if you go to your description, you'll have a link to that.
And NASA has even done their own research into applying warp field to space travel. And they have actually also broken down Guerin's trip. So NASA's been involved in this one as well.
Oh, yeah.
And they believe it's possible, and their report on that is the Warp Fields Mechanics 101 NASA Technical Report.
Now,
so anybody
does it say
who's
when this
tech,
happened? I remember, so I'm just asking.
I don't remember.
It actually happened in the
80s. Yeah, that's
it was
what
in the 80s
say,
when
remember.
This happened. And I feel really good for Guerin because, you know, like a lot of people, and again, most of it goes back to most people that see this stuff, they go back to the Bermuda Triangle.
Right.
And they try to link it with that or
and
with
they went
a theory of Atlantis.
And all
well,
this
yes,
stuff.
And the theory of
Atlantis.
I mean, when you get into this situation, The one thing is, people really have never looked at time slips. They look at aliens. They look at, and you know, I won't, before we go any deeper, I do want to make this comment, because you know, Hawkins and Carl Sagan were two people, and even though we don't do any ufology, I want to point this out. I always thought it was fascinating. They said, if we ever had aliens make contact with us, which, you know, some will say, well, they already have. The government just isn't telling us. But either way, before we get into tinfoil hats and all that, he always said if it did, it would be a violent contact of nature, would not be a friendly exchange. Both of them were recorded in history of his saying that. You know, so most people are thinking Independence Day here. And, you know, if you think about it, maybe, maybe not. I don't know. But there are, you know, if aliens exist and there are other races, it's a possibility. But I wanted to point that out because I always felt that was... Okay, so anyway, drones really got some validity after this whole thing when NASA started looking into it. People started taking it. Because for years, like I said, it was either aliens, the Atlantis, the you know, because the Beamy Road was one thing. They always said, oh, that was the original sunken, because it has a road there.
Right.
It was original Elation Empire.
So he was all roped in with the alien crazy kooks.
You know, and the snake oil salesman and everybody else. Right. Yeah, and this poor guy, I remember the interview he did online. I saw the video interview. Mm-hmm. And for anybody that doesn't know what a bonanza is, it's top wing, single aircraft. I think it holds six. And I mean, this guy was an experienced pilot.
Yeah.
And I can tell you, I island hopped down that way before, and those planes are used quite often. But, you know, when you're expecting a 50-minute flight, and it does make one wonder, because we can also go back to the TBIY bomber trainers of the Navy with flight, you know, I mean, when you start looking at all this stuff, you're wondering, hey, maybe this was time slips.
Right.
Maybe they went, because, you know, they've looked for the wreckage for years and never found it.
Right.
There may not be a wreckage. It may not be in this time and this, you know, portal.
Right.
So, but I wanted to say that that's one thing I thought was really good. At least he came out. And now people are looking at him and go, wow. You know, there's a possibility this is real.
Yeah. He's got validation. He's not some kook who was claiming aliens came and abducted him and then put his plane back in the sky. Because I don't think that's what happened.
Mm-mm. No.
In any way, shape, or form.
No.
And that's why I never would have thought of this case as a time slip case. Because when I was a young kid in the 80s and I heard this thing about this plane, the Bermuda Triangle, and I was like, oh my God, this is so super creepy and great and wonderful and aliens and all that. And then as I got older, I'm like, okay, that's a little far-fetched. That's a little weird. And now I'm like, whoa, okay, wait a second. There is some validation to this. Yeah. If our top physicists and astrophysicists at NASA are trying to unravel this,
they're interested in looking into it. Yeah.
Then there's got to be something here, right?
Yeah.
So any stories that occur on or near the sea usually involve storms.
Yeah.
Usually when we deal with stuff like this. And usually, not in all, but in most time slip stories, there's some sort of environmental aspect to them.
Sure.
People seem to feel a flatness or a mutedness or a depression,
change.
Whether it be in their own feelings or in the way the air feels around them.
Okay.
There's an unnatural stillness, silence, temperatures will drop.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes this has been, time slips have actually occurred within close proximity to solar phenomenon.
Oh,
I know we just had the eclipse on Monday.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we're all into solar phenomenons right now, but solar flares, electrical solar storms, that kind of thing, can sometimes be linked and equated to time slip accounts. So we're going to go into a different story right now.
Are we going into paranormal?
This was where we were going to go paranormal.
I was going to say, there's one thing I wanted to say before we do that. Think about if we could harness this, we could prove one that exists. There's more than just harnessing. Prove it exists, figure out how it works, which this is a large quota here, large project. We could actually get to the point that Star Trek transponders and transporters would be available. You walk in a booth and you go out to see Aunt Millie in Arizona, and 2 seconds later you peer out in Arizona and you walk out and...
Well, yes, because then you're walking through a time slip and you're not getting all your molecules split apart and then put back together.
That's not how a transporter works.
No,
because transporters work by splitting all your molecules apart
and putting them back together.
That I would never do. I'd walk through a time wormhole.
Well, the only thing with the time slip, though, once we learn how time works, we can determine how to move the molecules back and forth.
Yeah.
Well, the main thing is here.
Not only that, I ain't going to Arizona.
Yeah, I don't want to go to Arizona either.
I'm going to the Delta
Quadrant. Yeah.
That's where I'm going.
I do. You know,
why am I going to Arizona?
Yeah. The moral of this story is, whatever you do, don't fly Spirit Airlines.
Oh, gosh.
Anyway, all right, getting back to the paranormal
there goes
now.
That sponsorship.
Yeah. I don't think we were getting it anyway.
No.
If they did, they'd charge us for a bag and at least two cheese plates. Yeah.
They're coming after us now.
Oh, yeah. Shoot. So when I was going to do time slips, I had originally was going to do strictly a paranormal aspect of it.
Yes.
And I was thinking more of a psychic aspect to time slips.
Okay.
And I'll tell you why. The most well-known time slip incident, I think, for anybody in the paranormal field, even remotely, is the Moberly Jourdain incident in Versailles.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody knows that story. So okay. I'm not going to really go too deep into it. We're going to get into it just a little bit.
Sure.
Okay. But I was thinking it was more going to be psychic in nature with these two ladies. They didn't know each other very well.
The Versailles incident?
Yeah.
Okay.
And the reason I was thinking that as I was listening to a podcast, because, you know, I listen to podcasts
sure.
nonstop, you know, to the enjoyment and ridicule of my family. They just laugh at me every time I say, but quick, I listen to a podcast.
I know I've drug
about,
us in the tangents 15 times. Do you ever listen to ours just for the heck of it?
I can't hear myself
well,
talk.
Well, that's, people don't believe this, but I... So I asked me, they said, will you go over that? No, I'm editing, I do. But after yeah. it goes live, I don't listen to it.
No.
Because,
no,
I mean, you know, one, I don't know whether it's, I don't want to hear what I say, but most of the time, we've already been there. You know, but it's like traveling
there,
the same
that,
road. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't listen to it. I got thinking, you know, if everybody just clicked on, we could raise our ratings by 7. I didn't think about that, but I mean, yeah, but
it's
I don't
like
listen
when
to
people
it.
People
yeah.
ask movie stars, did you watch your movie?
No.
Yeah.
I did it, you know?
Yeah.
I click on to make sure it's downloaded and it's there. I listen
I click
to the
on
entry.
Just, yeah.
I go back. I make sure that the ghost story of the day is attached. And then I move on.
And that's the producer's job.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that you do what you have to do and that's it. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. So when I was listening about this, Moberly and Jourdain had different experiences on the same day. So they didn't see the same
really?
Thing. So my brain immediately went to these two women who are just meeting and getting to know each other and getting, you know, because they're going to be working at the same school together.
Sure.
Is basically what the whole story is. I thought, okay, well, maybe they're psychic in nature. Maybe they were
real quick. Maybe I don't know. Everyone does know this. Maybe I'll give a quick nutshell version.
Yeah, we're going to give a nutshell here real quick. But I was thinking maybe they had psychic visions of the past and didn't actually see the past.
Simultaneously?
Right. Well, okay. So, but then things changed a little bit.
Yeah.
So, okay, basically, the Moberly Jourdain incident, also known as the goats, the ghosts, not the goats.
No. Damn goats. Yeah.
The ghosts of the Petit Trianon or Versailles, the ghost of Versailles.
Mm-hmm.
So, this is the early 1900s. I mean, just the very beginning of the 1900s.
I hate to say this, it may be the Scotch, but I thought a neat episode title would be Staring at Ghosts. Men who stare at ghosts.
No.
People who stare at ghosts. Okay. I'm sorry, go ahead. Never mind.
That's the Scotch.
Yeah, it's got to be the Scotch. Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
So, Moberly, her dates are 1846 and she died in 1937. Jourdain was 1863 and she died in 1924. And this took place in 1911.
Yeah.
Well, no. They wrote their book in 1911. This took place before that. Like I said, just at the turn of the century, I believe.
I knew it was the early 1900s, as I recall.
Yeah. So it describes a visit that they made to the Petit Trianon, which is a small chateau on the grounds of the Palace of Versailles, where they claimed to have seen the gardens as they had been in the late 18th century, as well as ghosts, including Marie Antoinette and others.
And we talked about this during the... what episode?
I haven't mentioned Moberly.
Sure?
No.
I thought we had. Okay, never mind. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I don't recall.
We just talked about it.
Yeah, because this is one that is always talked about, so I usually try to veer away from it until I started thinking about time slips and thinking about, oh, let's bring the psychic aspect into this.
Yeah.
So that's why I thought
I'd
talk about it.
Look at it through those eyes,
All right, so they went to visit the Palace of Versailles. They didn't enjoy it. They didn't really think it was all that much, so they decided to walk through the gardens of the Petit Trianon. Upon reaching the Grand Trianon, they found it was closed to the public. And then they became lost after missing a turn for the main avenue. Okay, that is French, and I am not going to say it.
Go for it. I didn't take French, so.
Allée des Deux Trianon.
Oh, that sounds good. Even if it isn't right, it
Allée
sounds good.
Allée des Deux Trianon. Okay.
Enough of me.
So they entered this lane, and Moberly reports that she noticed a woman shaking a white cloth out a window, while Jourdain recalled noticing an old deserted farmhouse, outside of which was an old plow. At this point, they described feeling oppression, dreariness, after which the men, who they thought were palace gardeners told them to go straight on. So they encountered a man who looked like a gardener, and they said, keep going. So Mobley described the man as very dignified, dressed in long gray green coat with a small three-cornered hat. Jourdain recalled that she noticed a cottage with the woman holding a jug to a girl in a doorway. And she described it as a tableau vivant. A tableau vivant is a game they used to play where almost like charades, but you wouldn't act it out. You would just create a pose. And then your guests were to try to figure out what pose you were recreating.
Henceforth, strike a pose.
Yes. Basically, yes. Okay. So much like Madame Tussaud's waxworks, right? Only a tableau vivant is done with live people. So Moberly did not observe the cottage, but she remembered that when she felt the atmosphere change. She said, everything suddenly looked unnatural and therefore unpleasant. Even the trees seemed to become flat and lifeless, more like woodwork in tapestry. There were no effects of light and shade. It was just flat, and no wind stirred the trees. So then I'm like, okay, right there I'm thinking, okay, these two women had different psychic impressions of the actual atmosphere that they were in at the time, right? Okay. So that's where I was going to go with this whole time slip thing. I had a whole bunch of them all planned out. But then I found the time warping and the theory of relativity.
And suddenly
the things changed. Because the other incident that we had talked about before with Johann Wolfgang von Goethe. Now, him we talked about in the Doppelgangers episode. He is the author of Faust. And he wrote his autobiography himself. Obviously, it's an autobiography he wrote himself. And in that, he writes, I now rode along a footpath toward Durensheim. And here, one of the most singular forebodings took possession of me. I saw, not with the eyes of my body, but with those in my mind, my own figure coming toward me on horseback. And on the same road, attired in a dress which I had never worn, it was a pike gray with somewhat gold. As soon as I shook myself out of this dream, the figure had entirely disappeared. It is strange, however, that 8 years afterward, I found myself on that very road to pay one more visit to Frederica in the dress of which I had dreamed, and which I wore, not from choice, but by accident. So we had talked about this in the Doppelganger episode as I thought maybe a foreshadowing or a time slip. But when I started thinking about Moberly Jourdain being a psychic impression phenomenon between the two women, which is why they didn't have the same vision, I thought, well, what if Van Gogh also had a psychic premonition of himself? And when I found his quote where he said that he saw it not with his eyes, but with his mind, that was like, oh, okay, well, we can chalk this up to psychic phenomenons, right?
Yes.
But, and maybe Van Gogh was a psychic phenomenon and not a time slip like we had supposed in the Doppelganger, right?
That's Doctor Who. I mean, you know.
Right?
It was a, you know, one thing I was sitting here, that's what I've been doing while you've been talking. I was trying to remember, there was a story, and I think me and Heather watched it. It was about three, I think, British or French soldiers in World War I. Remember that? Okay, you got one. Okay, I was trying to find the name of the damn battle. I remembered the episode. I remembered the building, but I couldn't remember the name.
Yep, that's the next thing.
Sorry, I got ahead.
No, it's okay.
A lot of things I go through.
We're going to get there.
Yeah, I go through my mind. Things pop up, and I you know, carousel. It's a carousel. Yeah. It's the horse comes around before the horse is gone. Yeah, I got to get it out before the horse leaves again. Okay, never mind. Go ahead.
No, you're good. You're good. So. But then there's a time slip, and I'm not going to go into it in detail because as I was going into detail and researching further, I found a site that completely debunked this actual episode, this story, as having been debunked and totally made up and fictionalized. And again, anybody who's into the paranormal is going to know it. It's about the two couples that were traveling through France on a summer vacation in the 1970s, and they got lost and ended up at a hotel, and the hotel was very dated. They paid like 19 francs for their entire visit and their dinner. And when they came back through, they couldn't find it on their return trip. And of course, then all the pictures that they had then taken of the hotel and of them at the hotel were undeveloped and would came out.
Yes. They came out black and they were developable.
That is a wonderful story.
Sure.
A great story. But that involves interaction with people.
Yes.
Okay. I thought, oh my God, that fits perfectly into a time slip. They actually went through a time slip and entered into an entirely different
reality. But the interaction reality, with people.
With an interaction with people of that time frame that you've slipped into. Okay. I found a site that totally debunked that as a total story. I don't know if it's accurate or not. But I thought, well, you know what? We're just going to throw that one out because when in doubt, throw it out.
Yep.
Exactly. But the other case that I did find is the three English soldiers.
Yes.
Okay. So let's go into that one.
This is fascinating. I enjoyed watching this.
Really good.
I watched it on a video presentation. It was very interesting.
So this was during a training exercise in 1957. And I'm going to read it from listverse.com from Kersey in Suffolk.
Okay.
On a bright, crisp Sunday morning in autumn 1957, three trainee soldiers walked into the village of Kersey and suddenly found themselves in medieval England. As Andrew McKenzie explains, one of them, William Lang, who was a keen observer of the countryside, was also certain that the trees and grass changed to the colors of spring during the time slip.
Mm-hmm.
I guess they were in a different
season. It was fall. Yeah.
As they approached Kersey from the countryside, the three soldiers could see the church within its tower on the hill and hear the bells ringing. About 100 yards from the church, the bells abruptly cut out, and there was a general unnatural silence, with not a single bird call or breath of wind.
Mm-hmm.
Houses looked extremely ancient. There were no people, no TV aerials, telegraph wires, or street lamps. At the stream, there were white ducks, but there were, Lang stated, so quiet and lifeless as to appear almost like decoys. Through the tiny cottage windows, the boys saw no sign of life or habitation, save in what appeared to be a butcher's shop. There were three skinned ox carcasses, green with age, surrounded by cobwebs.
Yep.
As they squatted by a bridge over the stream, the soldiers' sense of eerie sadness shifted to a sense of outright evil, as though they were surrounded by hostile watchers. After about 25 minutes in the ghost village, they accordingly took to their heels and could suddenly hear the church bells once more and see smoke rising from chimneys where there had been none. Modern images of the church suggest it simply could not have disappeared from sight. This may indicate that the soldiers had slipped back some way before the 12th century when it was first built.
You know, the funny thing about it was, too, they got in trouble. Now, these guys, they were trainees. They weren't cadets, so they were trainees, and they were enlisted trainees. And when they got back, they proceeded, because the whole object of this training was to send them in different quartons. And those were the three that were supposed to go into the town of Kersey. Is it pronounced?
Kelsey.
No.
Kersey.
Kersey is, I think it's how it's pronounced. And they were supposed to come back.
Kersey.
I'm sorry. Yeah, Kersey.
We were both wrong.
It happens. And they were supposed to, you know, and of course, the people that were conducting this exercise knew what they should see. And, you know, actually, that's the strange part about it, because when they got in town in Kersey, the church had been there the whole time. But one of the shops they went to and looked in was a butcher shop.
Right.
It still had the meat hanging on the wall.
Right.
And it had, like, spider webs, but there was no one there. They couldn't find people at all.
Right.
And they had several shops. And then when they went back, after the argument, their sergeant took them back. And when they walk in, they see this building, but it's no longer a meat. So they
no longer a butcher shop.
No, and so really, they put it to bed, because if they didn't, they'd have been in trouble.
Right.
And so later in life, they reached out to each other. And this is like when they're in their 40s, and they reach out and say, hey, you know, do you remember when this happened? Well, one of them, and I don't remember which one it was, did all this research to publish this story. And he went back and found out it was true. The one house that had been a meat merchant, a butcher, if you will, was actually there prior mm-hmm. to it had been turned into a residence,
right?
And the bridge
over
the river.
As medieval shops actually are turned into residential houses when the towns flourish.
So apparently, what happened when the time slip they went into was during the plague, and it had been emptied out.
Oh, now that would make sense.
Yeah.
Because that's one thing I'm thinking is, and you segued perfectly for me. You didn't even know it, Heather. You didn't even know it. So that is one thing with the French one. How do you interact with people in the past? I mean, how does that even work?
Exactly.
So in a time slip, when you go into a deserted place, why aren't there people there? Okay.
Exactly.
Now, a plague
and
village.
Also, that's why the bells had not been there, because they hadn't been built yet.
Oh.
They were in the middle of construction.
There you go. Yeah.
The church was there, but not the bells.
So, I'm thinking, how does it work if you do time slip into the past? Like, literally, time slip into the past. Do you interact with people from the past?
That's a good question.
I've got examples.
Okay.
Okay. So, time slips can happen anywhere, right? We've established that. There's even time slip experiences from the States.
Sure.
And they're there. But the British Isles seem to have an overabundance of it. But of course, yeah. The British Isles have an overabundance
of
everything.
And oddly enough, the British Isles are something that we look at as having residual haunts the most. So,
And the amount of ley lines. I mean, if you pull the ley line map just for funsies, I mean, it's, you know. But there's a very specific hot spot. Well, one of them is Liverpool. Okay. And in Liverpool, there is a street called Bold Street.
Mm-hmm.
And it has more modern day time slip reports than any other place that I can find. Yes. I mean, they are over an abundance. And these are weird.
Okay.
And not only are they weird, the people doing the time slips interact with people from the past.
Okay.
And there are. Is a case of two people interacting who don't know each other, who are interacting from one time period into the past. And that's going to be our ghost story of the day. So guys, stay tuned. That'll be the ghost story of the day. But the one I'm going to relate now is interesting because there's two people involved, but only one person has time slipped. Okay. A young man named Sean, while shoplifting in Liverpool.
Doing his Christmas shoplifting early.
Yeah, in 2006. He was caught, and so he was being chased by a security guard. He was running away, headed down Hanover Street.
Yes.
Trying to shake off the guard. He turned into a dead-end street called Brooks Alley.
Okay.
Sean then started to feel the atmosphere got very thick and tight, like we talked about, right?
Yeah.
He waited for the guard to come around the corner because he knew he was going to be, you know, being
caught.
He was at a dead end. He was waiting
for the inevitable.
The guard never appeared. And so Sean thought he gave him the slip. So he waited a little bit. And then so he started to saunter back out and look down Hanover Street. But when he did, he realized something was wrong. The road looked different. The pavement looked different. The cars driving by were very old fashioned. The roadworks that he knew were supposed to be there were gone. Soon he saw people around him walking that were not in the right attire. Their clothes were old.
Sure.
To him. Something wasn't quite right, so he began to panic. He realized somehow he had stepped back in time. He saw a kiosk that was selling newspapers, so he went over there and headed over there. Leaning over the stand, he looked at the front page of the Daily Post, and it was dated 18th May, 1967. So he panics, freaks out, starts running down the street, and then all of a sudden...
excuse me.
Nope, you're fine. Everybody was walking around. People were still walking. It was 1967. And then everything changed, and he was back in his own time frame again. Now, the weird thing is the tale doesn't end there, because when the security guard was interviewed, the security guard stated that he ran after Sean.
Sean
turned down the alley and completely disappeared.
Yeah, I knew that was coming.
The security guards saw him disappear.
Wow.
Okay. So, when we take this back to the paranormal realm.
Okay.
This is where we're going to freeform the rest of the episode.
Before we get there, think about it. Which is the worst sentence? Possibly a fine and a day in jail, or going back in time where you don't know anybody or anything?
I think. Oh, I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah. Food for thought. Go ahead. Yeah.
I thought that's definitely
what I was thinking when you said it. I'm thinking he's waiting for the inevitable. He knows he's caught. Yeah. He knows probably, and I don't know, about that time, it may have been a day because they didn't have money to pay fines. So.
He was a minor.
Yeah.
Maybe it was 2006. He would have certainly had.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, he would have probably had, he'd had parents or somebody could pay the fine.
Maybe. It depends
maybe,
on what he lifted to.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
But either way, it wasn't going to be horrible. But no, think about getting trapped where you don't know anybody, you don't know the era. If you're in 06, how old was he again?
14? He was 19.
19, okay.
19.
Yeah. So, I mean, he was old enough to know what was going on, but still, to go be charged back in history and you lose everybody you ever know.
Yeah, that would be...
Just a thought.
Yeah. That would be weird. That would be weird.
And then you go back and you can't... everything you have is invalid.
Right. Exactly.
Right. So my time slip episode was going to be just about the fun paranormal time slips and the psychic phenomenon that I think time slips could have been. But then it turned into this metaphysical, you know.
Well, I don't think you can get around
time
that.
Warp theory,
you
know? Right?
Yeah, I don't think you can get around those parts.
So then this raises questions with our paranormal investigating. Mm-hmm. And I've heard other people say this before. When we're seeing the Victorian lady on the stairs,
yeah,
is she seeing us?
Oh, interesting.
When we get EVPs, is that happening in real time for the spirit talking to us?
Well, you know, they supposedly come in on a higher vibration, a higher sound. But that's a good question, because that doesn't tell you if it's real-time audio you're getting or if this right. But, you know, when, and this is the problem I get, because most residuals we see, we tell everybody, hey, you know, they won't interact with
right.
you.
And residuals, I mean, yeah. you get your stone tape theory, right? When that yeah. electromagnetic energy and activity just, because Einstein yeah. says electricity never disappears. Exactly. It just changes. And if we're an electrical component in our body, we're just water and electricity,
yes.
right?
Yes.
When we die, that electricity has to change somehow. Yeah. It does not disappear. It does not. It has to.
One of the things that, you know, I was thinking is, because we always tell everybody, hey, you know, again, you know, it's residual. It's not interactive. You can't talk to it. It's just imprint on time. And we tell everybody that. But now this raises a new question.
It does. Well, and like I was saying, I think with when activity, you know, like in Gettysburg, that's always the one I go to mm-hmm. because that is so traumatic. And when somebody dies traumatically like that,
sure.
and that energy dissipates so quickly going into the surrounding limestone, the surrounding granite, yes. whatever, that stone tape theory that we say that yeah. it plays over, and that's a residual. You can't interact with it. It just, something in the atmosphere creates that energy to be replayed or released or something.
Sure.
And I totally think that that fits in with this electromagnetic theory.
Well, they have to be a certain amount of constructs right. that have to be there for the time slip to happen. No different than it does but for the stone tape theory.
I wouldn't consider this a time slip. Stone tape theory, not necessarily a time slip, because stone tape theory is actually a phenomenon of that electromagnetic energy replaying itself.
Okay.
Where I wonder if the time slips come in into this, like we talked about earlier, this ball of yarn
okay.
theory. Okay. If all time exists together, and it is not yeah. linear, if it all exists together, what if in the paranormal realm that we are actually interacting not with the past,
yes,
but with the present on a different level? And this is where it gets so cauliflowered and so mushroom, because
well,
this is like, this yeah. is something we can't really work around, because this
it's
is
like
not
the grains and wood. It goes every different direction at this point.
It does, because, I mean, how can we say, like, and we'll get into this later when we do our episode on this theater that we just investigated this past weekend, when we were having this conversation with this spirit that we thought died in an accident 117 years ago, how does that correlate with what we're thinking now?
Is that a time slip, or were we reaching into the other fold of multiverse?
Had it just happened for him? But then yeah. he said he watches the movies with the people in the audience. So is there a linear component?
Well, you know, I think at times
it raises so many different questions,
oh yeah,
you know?
I think it's sometimes people inherently want to say, okay, when you become a ghost, you're trapped. I call it the Beetlejuice theory. You're trapped to a yeah. certain location, and you sit and watch everything. And I don't know necessarily that's the case.
I don't think it is.
I think time's linear.
Exactly.
We make it linear
we
for ourselves.
Definitely
so
make
we can
linear.
Understand it. But
right.
The other thing,
it actually does happen to us. Yeah. I mean, yesterday I was doing this, and today I'm doing this.
And so we can understand
but
the
I don't
chaos.
Think it's the only component. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so when we are talking to, let's say, a spirit, I think, well, personally, it's happening for them. At the same time, you know, I think he's like, I just had this accident.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But also, at the same time, yes, he has died, and he is watching the movies.
Yes, because yeah. he was saying that, and I was like, why are we getting conflicting answers on the K2?
Because it's not linear, so it is happening all at the same time.
All the same time for him.
All at the same time for him.
Right, because he was like, No, it can't be 2024 because it's 1907. But then later he's like, yeah, it's 2024. I totally can't understand that. And yes, I'm watching these movies with the people in the audience. But
or does he replay the incident over and over, right? Mixed with life?
It just now makes investigating so much more interesting and multi-leveled because there's so many different... Why is it we only ever see Victorian ghosts?
That's a good question.
Didn't Dustin say something about that?
Yeah, one thing that was a couple of things.
I'm sorry, Dustin missed that part.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. I was bringing this up. Dustin had an interesting theory, and I got to admit, I really like this. And Dustin, if you're listening, I really like this theory. One is that we're really all just souls in a human body, and it's part of the experience. It's a life experience, but we're all inherently, he says, if you think about it, and you think that at first and foremost we're a soul, but we're a soul attached to the body for a certain trip, and then when that trip is over with, you begin another trip, which we've said for years that, you know, death is not a final position.
That's our reincarnation.
It's a transition
aspect, yeah.
And I think that's a good way of looking at it.
Like you're saying, the reason we only see Victorian ghosts is that's all they have the energy for.
Yeah.
Oh.
And you know, eventually, as time goes along, their battery's going to die.
And then all the people are going to see 80s,
70s. Right? Yeah.
I'm just waiting to see the slouch pants.
Oh, yeah, and the big hair. Yeah.
No, thank you.
Yeah. I didn't like it then. Don't like it now. But, Well, and I think that he had a good point with that as well. I mean, you know, we have always said residual works off of energy. And when the energy's gone or the battery starts to die, then they will gradually go away.
Right.
Look at all these castles in England that have, you know, the horseman that rides through or whatever, right. It gradually fades away.
But I think a residual haunt is completely different from an intelligent interactive, and I'm wondering if the residuals aren't our stone tape theory, that maybe they lose their energy and so you can't see them anymore, but the intelligence may be a time slip or a melding of these.
Some of those residuals are being fed.
Yes, that's true.
That's why they last longer.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. And if you've got a residual next to running water, you automatically
have
some
power source.
Power source. Yeah.
Well, people always go, well, I don't understand how that works. Okay, anybody that grew up now, you know, I'm 57. I turn 58 next month. So, but I grew up with cassette tapes.
Yeah.
And 8-track tapes where you have a tape. You know,
right.
VHS players, Betamax players, they have a magnetic head that imprints that on the tape.
Right.
So what is there to say in a magnetic region we can't imprint things on stone? What is a transistor?
No,
it's a quartz crystal.
You absolutely can, because they're actually trying to work on getting data digitized onto quartz.
We use quartz now.
Yeah, we do.
Well, yeah. And we've used it in transistors for years.
So we know that it holds and contains. Okay.
So places,
and this goes back to the theory of the crystal skulls.
I was going to go there. And
sorry, go ahead.
I never, ever.
We're both thinking the same way.
Yeah. I never, ever believed in the crystal skulls, ever. I thought, okay, that's a fun story. Great. Whatever.
I always figured it was some sort of storage, like a USB drive.
Exactly.
Yeah, we've gotten data now.
And I'm just like, okay. All right.
Now, here's where the cook your noodle. How the hell did they know all that back then?
Okay. We can't go into this podcast because then my family...
Van Duncan, or was it not Van Duncan? Chariots of the Gods.
Von Donnegan.
Yeah, I was saying it right. Von Donnegan, what are you calling us, telling us it's... Or what's his name?
Carl,
I don't want to say it's aliens.
No.
It's aliens. No.
Eric Von Donnegan.
Yeah, he wrote The Chariots of the Gods. And he does a lot of these
My family is now going to disown me if we go down this podcast.
Yeah. That's another rabbit hole. And then you get, what's his name? The guy with the big hair dude always says, I don't want to say it's aliens, but it's aliens. Best shot I ever saw was him and David Duchovny. And they're both standing there together with their hands out going, it's aliens.
But you can't do that because... Okay. Anyway,
yeah, I know. It's a mess. We don't want to get down that hole. We do not want to do that.
Nope.
Let's move on past that point. One thing I do want to say, though, you know, which would be with podcasts and so on, you start getting into the grandfather theory or into the grandfather paradox.
You
get into the butterfly theory or paradox.
It hurts your head.
Well, yeah. You sit there and you think, what if?
All of this hurts your head.
And this is where the argument comes in. And I've seen, and what was the physicist that you just...
Michio Kaku.
Yes. He said, it's very hard to determine, because if you kill your grandfather, but you already exist. So the question is are you killing him in present time, a multiverse? I mean, when you start talking,
right?
Then, right. Yeah, you're right. That's when your hair starts to hurt.
Yeah.
Because when you start to try work these things out. But it, right. The big thing with us in paranormal investigation is now we have to go, is this a residual from a stone, tape, or water theory? Or is this a time slip?
Is it a time slip? Or is it an intelligent
spirit
haunt that has been trapped? And has it been trapped?
Because we've told people forever that intelligent haunts.
Has it been literally trapped? Or is it think it's trapped?
Exactly.
Because I don't think that a spirit is trapped where it expires.
Well, we really know that isn't, because we've investigated sites where ghosts will move 2 or 3
Because Al Capone is all over the freaking country. That guy moved more than...
Yeah. He's still being hunted by the FBI. Yeah. Yeah. He's still being hunted by FBI, and he probably still has syphilis, and he's on the run, baby.
I just think it just proves that nobody's an expert in anything.
We've done
like
investigations where we've had a ghost go 3 houses in a row, back and forth between the houses.
I did, too.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
And the owners didn't even know that this spirit was there, because they didn't think about it.
Yeah.
And that's my favorite question I like to ask, and I asked it this past weekend, is you have a place that has a story. And that story gets exaggerated and expanded, and that's my other little soapbox I like to get on. But they get stuck on that story.
Yes.
And so my favorite question to ask is, am I talking to somebody who I don't know your story yet? Do I not know your name? Have I said your name yet? Mm-hmm. Are you somebody that we don't know? And invariably, I will get a positive response to that. And that's what happened the other night.
Yeah.
We
found
that accident victim. Because we were looking for a couple other people, but I thought...
Did you ever get a name of any sort?
Not from him. Okay. And I've listened to just one of the recorders, or two of the recorders, and I don't have any names yet. But I did get some information on his age and who he might have been. So I'm now going back through those accident newspaper reports to try and pin down if we can find out who that guy is.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see.
It's so cool when you get somebody that you weren't expecting. Like, we can't pigeonhole ourselves and box ourselves into one theory.
What you call paradigm. That's a real good example of a paradigm. People within the paradigm can't think without sides. So, you know, it's not allowing them to think outside the box.
Right.
You know, one of the biggest things about paradigm shift is when someone steps out of that box and can see other things and realize, oh my God, I never thought of it that way. But they're locked. As long as they're in that paradigm. And I'm wondering sometimes if in the case, I'll tell you my theory. My theory is you have both residual, like you were talking about with the stone tape, water tape theory, and then you have the time slips. And I think the time slips we can communicate with. The question is how and why.
Right.
You know, that's the big one. I don't know that we're able to answer yet. Because technically, if it's a time slip and we're looking back in time, it's no different viewing a film. We shouldn't be able to interact with those folks, but we do.
No, but they do.
Yeah.
And in our ghost story of the day, when you hang out, you'll see about that. But there's also another one in Liverpool, where it took place in Liverpool. The guy is a coin collector, and he went down the street to... another one is it's a baby store. He went down the street to get those little cellophane, those plastic envelopes that he slipped the coins in.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so he went and he went to the store to purchase some. Mm-hmm. And they were really cheap. And he's like, wow, okay, great. So he gave the lady the money and he went home and he used them all. And he went back. The store no longer existed. And he's like, what the heck? And after researching, that store was there 50 years prior.
Yeah.
And then another story, she went to go buy baby clothes for her sister's baby shower. Went to this great place. Oh, my God, this is a great store. Wonderful. But when she went to pay, she was going to pay with her debit card.
Yeah.
The lady looked at her like, we take cash, you know. And she said, I didn't have any cash, so I'll do that. So she went somewhere else. When she was relaying the story to her mother said, that store no longer exists. It was closed 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So those are actually... stories where the person has encountered with somebody in that time slip.
Well, the odd thing, too, is, you know, I'm thinking, if you hand someone cash, you're in a time slip, and they look at the bills we've got today, and they go, oh, that's funny. Real. Yeah, and you're counterfeiters. You know,
exactly.
It would put you in a lot of trouble. I mean, you carry coin, but even coin, if somebody's smart enough to look at the date. Now, coin, you might get somebody who doesn't look at it. But our bills have changed so immensely in the last 30 years.
Right.
You know, it would stand out. Now, you know...
I don't know how much British currency has changed in the past 56 years. Well, it
changes
know.
With a monarch to a certain degree. Canadian changes well, okay, more than
Queen
British.
Elizabeth
but, yeah.
has, the second has been
well,
around.
Well, and they're going to leave that
was
on.
Around for
yeah.
quite a while.
I mean, yeah. they're going to leave that on as a tribute to her, but, you know, it's kind of like with us.
Anyway,
yeah, for a while. Yeah. Someone was talking about putting new presidents on bills, and I don't think you'll see it anyway soon.
That
I mean,
won't happen here.
Nah, I just don't see it. It doesn't work that way. But
changes too often.
I tell you what, and I'm looking at this thing. The big thing is we're going to have to look at how we investigate.
Yeah.
Because we can't go around telling people, well, residuals you can't talk to because, well, it could be a time slip. And if it's a time slip, we might be able to communicate with them.
Yeah, maybe.
Now, I'm barely throw something out that neither one of you know about. My producer and director's going, oh, God. But, yeah, I was thinking about this for Christmas.
Oh,
and
Lord. Here
yeah,
we go.
Christmas
now
episode.
What?
Yeah, yeah. No, this isn't the scotch. I've been working on this for a while in my head.
Right.
But there's one that.
There's scotch every
yeah,
day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. By God, it's the water of the gods. Yeah.
We buy it by the liter at
yeah.
Costco.
And I'm able to see visions. But, no, anyway, we don't want to go there. Anyhow. Yeah, yeah.
This is not
yeah.
helping your case,
yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah, I can say I'm cheaper than coffee is. You know, call here, and I'll tell you what I think, but it may not be accurate. Anyway, anyhow, we'll get back on track here.
Not the
or
coffee
publishable.
Drink.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Or publishable, yeah, by any extent. Please don't quote me either. And but
okay, so
you know,
sorry,
honestly,
Chip. What is this idea?
This there's a story, and it's a very interesting story, and they made a movie. Disney came out with it last year. It's a really cool movie. It's called The Shepherd. And it's a true story about World War II, about this pilots that they used to send out because on bombing missions. Now, remember, we're talking about a time when radar wasn't really great.
Mm-hmm.
Sonar barely existed. And we're battling the Nazis. And you know, and this is the British. They've got all these different fields on the coast. And they're flying back and forth between France and you know, there's the coast. Back then, flying isn't what it is today. If you're on Spirit Airlines,
yeah.
It still isn't.
Oh, God.
Anyway, yeah. Yeah, we weren't getting them as a sponsor anyway. But anyway, yeah.
Sue us.
But
yeah.
It would have worked so perfectly.
Yeah.
Spirit Paranormal with Spirit Airlines would have
that's
been
that's right.
Made
yeah.
in heaven.
Yeah.
Okay.
God. Yeah, contact us if you feel like you want to do something there. But anyway, no, the long story short is this one pilot... Yeah, he's flying a vampire, which is, and I was sitting here trying to think, it's a...
It's an airplane.
Well, yeah, it's a jet. It's a, yeah, thank you for helping me out. I was trying to think of the name of the manufacturer, and it's left me. They also made, in World War II, they made mosquitoes.
Yeah.
And so anyway, this pilot's flying a vampire, which is a jet aircraft. Christmas Eve night, he wants to be with his girlfriend, his family, but he's stuck in France.
Mm-hmm.
And it just comes up, there's a flight that comes up that he can take, but it's going to be an IR flight, that's instrument flight. So, you know, problem with instrument flight is, it's dicey back then. The compasses weren't real good. If anything goes off, you're screwed.
Right.
You know, if you have visual flight, oh, that's easy. A pilot can see where
easy-ish.
He's going, and
yeah.
Well, easy-ish, yeah. You know, and I took ground school, is the reason I'm saying this, and I'll tell you, VFR compared to IFR,
right.
Big difference.
Right.
He leaves out a night with a horrific amount of fog. He leaves off on a course bearing, heading for the British Isles. He gets out, and he gets to a point where his instruments fail. The entire panel shuts down. He has nothing. Altimeters, nothing. He doesn't know where he's at, has no clue. He finally gets a few things working, but not enough to help him out, and he doesn't know how far off course. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, de Havilland. It was de Havilland Mosquito. Now, this is a prop-driven plane that was used in World War II. This story takes place, it was actually a true story. It takes place in about 57, and so we're talking, 16 years after the war began, and I mean, so we're flying jets now, and you know, this mosquito comes up, and it actually has a very famous actor, John Travolta, flying it in the movie. But he tells him, he says, I'm here to help you get back. He says, do you have instrument problems, so forth. They signal back and forth. They establish the fact that aircraft is in distress. So he says, follow me, stay on my tail, and he says,
so he guides him back
in. Guides him back in, and then they were called shepherds, and they, so what would happen is, after a mission, these guys would land, refuel, and then go back out to make sure that all these planes that didn't have good IFR, they could get them back in.
Yep.
And the particular pilot, he lands on this really, and it gets spooky as hell. It's a cool scene. He's out on the end of this runway, because this runway is not made for jets. People don't catch, and they don't talk about it. But he's at the end of the runway. The way he's at the end of the runway was a mosquito could land with a prop and reverse without a problem. A jet need a lot longer runway.
Right.
So he's at the very end, stops right before it ends. This old car comes up, has a corporal in it, and he gets him and takes him back up to the flight, and he's asking about the base. base. He says, oh, no, you're not on that base. You're on this other base. And he said the catch is, and I don't want to give away a lot of clues. But anyway, if you want to read the book, read the book. But okay. it leads us into, because now I'm sitting here thinking, this whole story, I mean, that could have been a time slip. Because they interacted, you know, in the plane. So, and
now, it's funny you bring up RFA.
Yeah.
Because when we talk about British Isles, mm-hmm. you think castles are haunted over in Britain. Go to an RFA base.
Oh, yes.
They are probably one of the most haunted things in Britain. And if you're interested in stories, there's a great lady, Haunted Histories mm-hmm. with Penny. I didn't forget her last name, but she's a podcast. Haunted History.
Okay.
She loves World War II aviation. And actually, the Mosquito and the Lancaster are her favorite two aircraft from World War II. And she will talk for hours about the haunted RFA bases there all over.
Well, reach out to her and let her know we got this broadcast up, so she's mentioned. I tell you, the thing that caught me is I didn't know they had a vampire. I'd never seen these before. Mm-hmm. And it came in the story. Now, I'm not an expert, but I like World War II aircraft. I know quite a bit about them. My dad always was really involved with it. But when they said vampire, I thought, yeah, I knew the Mosquito. I'd heard that before, De Havilland Mosquito. But yeah, this is the, you know, when they get a De Havilland vampire, I'm thinking, okay, I've not heard of that one before. Right. And it was kind of interesting. Mind you, the typical 1960s jet design, you know, sweep back, all aluminum. Yeah. And
again, we would have thrown that into a paranormal experience. Yeah. And, and I'm not saying it's not. As a ghost plane. But maybe it was a time slip plane.
Well, and I don't want to give it all away, but if you go on Disney now, or on the Disney Channel, it has it right now. And it's only like a 35-40 minute program. It's a very short program.
Neat.
But it was really neat. I don't know. Travolta's a flyer, so he's got a pilot. He's got several planes, large planes, and you know, it just seemed to fit. But I was really taken by that. Came out last year at Christmas, just a few months ago.
Yeah.
And I really thought, but, you know, that came into mind. So I'm sitting here thinking, they interacted. He helped him.
Right.
So, and how many times have we had a documented history of something like that happening?
Yes, exactly.
That we had the interaction.
Yes.
I mean, it opens up a hole. And I want to get out of this room hole before it gets any deeper. But anyway,
I mean, we could
stay tuned
for
the Christmas episode.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that was fun. That was
okay. Well, I tell you what. I want to ask everybody for a favor. If you would, I want everybody out there that's a listener, just do me this favor. Go on to our Facebook page. That's at Spirit Indiana 1, capital S, Spirit Indiana, all one word, 1. Go on and tell us your name and where you're from.
Yep.
That's all I ask. I want to see where all we got a ton of listeners out there. I'd love to see where you're all from.
Our best route shows, you know, Australia as a prime spot for us.
Yes.
But we've got listeners all over.
All over.
I mean, so, you know, so if you're out there, please.
Or if you've got an idea for a show, give us some ideas for some episodes.
Yes.
If there's something local to your area that you'd like everybody else to know about, let us know.
Exactly. And we'll be back the 15th unless Spirit Airlines attorneys contact us. So otherwise, we'll be back on... No, I'm sorry. Yeah, we'll be back on the 30th.
Producer's nightmare.
Anyway. Yeah. Sorry. Yes, I have that tendency from time to time. But honestly, this is such a neat subject. I'd love to revisit it later. But you got to be careful not to get too deep into the whole process. I mean, because there's so many theories to get offside.
We've done so much time.
Yeah. Right. And some of it make your head
gone over our time.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, we're going to wrap this up, folks. We want to thank you again for listening to Ghost to Ghost. Again, we always have broadcast on the 15th and 30th. And at this time, we will join. I want to say something, too. I'm sorry. This whole episode was written by Jennifer Verne. She did a great job. This is a good episode. And do you have any sources you want to cite other than ones we already have?
You know what? I don't have my source page, but we'll put them in the show.
Put them in the show. Yeah, it'll be in the notes.
We will cite all of our sources always.
Exactly. And so with that, we're going to go to this episode of Ghost to Ghost with Jennifer Verne.
Today's ghost story of the day is from Medium.com, The Liverpool Time Slips and Mysterious Occurrences in Bold Street. Frank and his wife were out for a stroll in Liverpool Town Center. It is 1996. His wife decided that she wanted to go and buy a book at Waterstones, the large bookstore, and they started to walk towards the area of the shop. As they approached Bold Street, Frank decided to go to another shop first, but bumped into his friend and stopped to chat in the street. His wife went ahead without him. A few moments later, Frank said goodbye, visited his shop, and turned to go back to meet his wife. After reaching Bold Street, he headed towards the bookstore. As he approached, he glanced up and was surprised to see the name Cripps above the door. As he was about to cross over to see what was going on, a van swept past him with the name Cardens on the side. The van driver honked his old-fashioned horn and drove past. Looking around, Frank suddenly realized that things were not quite what they should be. He looked at the cars driving past and realized they were all old-fashioned vehicles, such as people would have driven back in the 1950s or 60s. And then he noticed the people. Men were wearing hats and masks, and the women were dressed in headscarves, full skirts, and had old-fashioned hairstyles, such as women wore just after the war. By this time, Frank was beginning to feel slightly freaked out. He carried on crossing the road and headed towards the store. As he got closer, he noticed in the window there were handbags, shoes, and umbrellas. Suddenly, he saw a young woman looking up at the shop sign. She looked confused. She was wearing modern clothes, and as she saw him approaching, she smiled at him. Frank went into the shop, closely followed by the young woman. When they entered, he was surprised and pleased to see that it had indeed turned back into a bookshop. The young woman smiled, shook her head, and said, "That was strange. I thought it was a new clothes shop." Then she walked away, looking extremely puzzled. This may sound like an unlikely tale, but the odd thing about it is that Frank was, in fact, a former police officer who used to deal in facts and definitely wasn't the type of person who would believe in the paranormal. Frank never stopped talking about it. Was this a time slip? Evidently, Cripps was a woman's shop that sold clothes and other goods decades before, and Cardens was also a well-known in Liverpool firm that owned vans around the same time.
Thanks for listening to Ghost. Again, I'm your host, Chief Lawson. You can find Ghost to Ghost on all major formats on the 15th and 30th of the month at midnight. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, maybe have a question or subject you'd like to ask about on air, or be used on the show, please email us at ghosttoghost@spiritindiana.com, ghosttoghost@spiritindiana.com. I want to thank my production staff on Spirit, Jennifer Vern, our research manager and our producer, and Heather Lawson, our trainer on Spirit and our podcast director, for helping make these podcasts possible. My chief of staff, Andrew Books, for his guidance and help on the scripts, and everyone else involved. Thank you so much. See you next time. Until then, stay safe and remember the truth is out there. Good night. Ghost to Ghost podcast and its contents is the property of Spirit Paranormal LTD, all rights reserved. We welcome you to download and play the podcast and share with others for personal use. You may not, except with written permission, use or distribute its contents for commercial use. Spirit Indiana Paranormal, covering the Hoosier State since 2002, Indy's oldest parapsychology investigation group. If you're experiencing what you believe to be paranormal issues, reach out to us for help at www.spiritindiana.com or call our hotline at 317-883-9103. Again, that is www.spiritindiana.com or our hotline at 317-883-9103. Thank you for listening. Take care of yourself and the ones you love, and be safe out there.